Today, I'm joined by Roger Lungdon. He's the director and founder of There Be Giants, a consultancy and training firm that's focused on strategic alignment through objectives and key results. We talk strategy, culture, and how to get going. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Thank you so much for joining me, Roger. Before we get into the conversation around strategy and OKRs, could you give us a bit of background on you and There Be Giants and how that came about?
Sure. Pleasure to be with you, Emma. So the business can trace its roots back to 2010 when I started it as just pure coaching business. And I was working with founders of tech businesses here in Manchester. And I did that for a few years in between maybe doing work elsewhere, like out in the North Sea. I did some work on the rigs for a contract, which was around operational performance at that point. But I noticed that there was an issue with, or where things fell down for those founders, often because there was a lack of experience, was around once they developed their strategies and their plans, actually getting them into play, actually, you know, executing against them. And so that's when I went on a bit of a research journey of my own to look to find other, you know, how did organizations that were really good at this, what did they do that was different to everybody else?
Yeah.
And that was when I came across OKRs, and I thought, so I started to play with that with my clients and got some really good results. Yeah, you know, it kind of grew from there. The pivots sort of happened around sort of 2016, 2017. And within 12 months, we'd formed some really good partnerships, which took us off to, which meant that we were getting introduced to clients all over the world. And so over the course of the next few years, we were working, you know, everywhere from Jamaica to New Zealand. When we got into lockdown, you know, like most, I was thinking, am I going to have a business at the end of this? But at that point, actually, what happened was larger corporates who we kind of up to that point, the largest organization we probably worked with was maybe a couple of thousand people. So kind of verging on corporate, but not quite. What happened was because all of a sudden the world had to start remote working overnight, we had companies coming to us going, oh, we've got all these remote teams, but we've not got the framework or the systems or the working practices to kind of keep them focused and keep them kind of together and coalesced around, you know, shared goals and that sort of thing. So we had the likes of TalkTalk and ITV and so on that came and got us to do the work. And we proved that it could be done remotely, which we'd always known it could be, but clients had obviously always wanted us to be face-to-face with them up to that point. And continue to do work remotely over those couple of years where it was all on and off, on and off, on and off. Again, all around the world. You know, even worked with biggest retail bank in Argentina at that point. God knows how they found us. I still don't know to this day how they found us, but we ended up working with them for quite a chunk of time. And that gave us our foothold in the corporate space. And so we work at both ends of the spectrum. We still work with the sort of founder-led businesses. I would say ranging from sort of sometimes, you know, 50 or 60 people up to who are really ambitious and want to grow, right up to, you know, probably 300-400 people. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we've got the corporates of, you know, 15,000-20,000 people that we work with. And it's more for them, it's more that they have, perhaps they've got engagement data that says that, you know, their employees just don't understand the strategy, they don't understand the contribution that they can make, they don't feel connected to it. And perhaps there's a lot of siloed working as well that's going on, and they need to break through those silos, they need to improve the collaboration, that sort of thing. And so they turn to OKRs to really help with that as well.
Yeah. And so do you find there's a thread with all of these types of businesses in terms of what they're trying to achieve and overcome by turning to OKRs?
Yeah, to a certain degree, there is commonality. But I would say the sort of founder-led sort of medium-sized business end of the spectrum is often because they want to avoid what's happened to the corporates. Right. And then the corporates come to us because they need to kind of row back from that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is a commonality. There is a commonality there, but they're kind of approaching it from different directions.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I imagine brings different challenges depending on that size and complexity. I think something you said there will really resonate with most leaders, regardless of the size of business, which is, you know, a strategy can be really great in a PowerPoint presentation or a boardroom conversation and then not get into execution in a real lived way.
Yeah.
How does focusing on strategy through OKRs help those types of businesses?
Yeah, so what OKRs can do, and let me just be clear for those that are watching or listening to us, you know, OKRs, objectives and key results, yeah, that is at its most basic form, just a different way of writing a goal. But there's a whole load of principles and practices that wrap around it, okay, which if you really embrace those and do those well, then you get all the extra benefits. So it's not just a case of writing your goals in a different way and the world changes. There's a lot of stuff that wraps around it, okay? So in terms of how it helps sort of translate the almost somewhat abstract language of strategy that, you know, those in the organization sometimes find hard to understand and connect to and understand what it means for them.
Yeah.
This is what OKRs can help with. It can help with the translation. So you can help, I call it framing. Okay. You can help to frame, in other words, what the sort of longer term ambitions are, what the medium term ambitions are, and therefore what the short term ambitions are. And it's the short-term ambitions that matter to the majority of the organization because that's the time frame in which they work. If you give them, I mean, it's funny because just to kind of wind back a little bit as I talk through the timeline, when I was doing my research and looking at different, you know, how do organizations do this really well, one of the things that was really motivating me was at that point, there was a real belief in changing the way that objectives had been deployed in organizations.
Right.
Because, and I mean that in the context of individual performance management, okay? Yeah. Because there was a recognition, and I know this, I knew this from when I was leading my teams in corporate, where we had to work on an annual cycle for objective setting. It was useless. Because even back then, in the noughties, you know, the pace of change was outstripping a 12-month objective. So you'd find yourself getting to the end of the year, looking at that objective and thinking, well, that doesn't apply anymore. But because it was fixed at the beginning of the year, you had to provide some sort of write-up against it and some sort of grading of performance against it, which left the individual feeling like, how is that fair? Because that's not what I've been working on for the past 9 months. It might have been for the first 3 months, but not, you know, something changed. We had a course correction and so on and so forth. So I thought it was worth just mentioning that because that's what OKR seeks to definitely get around.
Right.
Because, like I said, you've got the framing, the chunking down, if you will, from that sort of long-term, medium-term, short-term, so that you've got the option, you know, if you're reviewing and resetting, say, every 3 months, then you've got the option to course correct. So that's where it brings in the agility because you can, you know, something's changed internally, externally, or maybe you've learned something really valuable from the previous 3 months and you want to iterate and change, you know, tweak and change for the next 3 months. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. That's what it should be about. But if you're constraining yourself with like the traditional sort of 12-month cycles, I mean, like I say, 10, 15 years ago, they weren't even fit for purpose. So that now,
the pace of change now means
it's just ridiculous.
So much can change in that 3 month period.
Absolutely.
So what you're talking about is small, deliberate steps towards maybe a North Star or a strategic vision that a business has. How does that work in practice?
So, yeah, so it's still really important to have your North Star. It's still really important to define, you know, what your, I would say, you know, what used to be a 5-year plan now probably is more likely to be a 3-year plan.
Yeah.
And whereas you traditionally might have, when you got to, say, down to that 3-year plan, you might have got a little bit more detailed about how you were going to achieve it. What seems to work better now is that you say, right, these are the results that we want to achieve by these certain dates in the lead up to whatever that final outcome is for the 3 years. But we're not going to get really detailed at this stage about the route that we're going to take. Yeah?
Yeah.
So imagine climbing the mountain. You know, you kind of pick your waypoints, but you're happy as you're climbing to maybe alter your route, you know, because you might find that one path is not as easy to navigate as another. So therefore you tried it, you've learned, you've come back and you've started again down a different route. And that's what the benefit of having the shorter term, you know, that sort of 3 month or some clients you choose 4, which is fine. You go any longer than that and you start to lose the benefit. You know, we find that if you try to go for, say, a 6 month cycle, there's too much time between the setting and the end. And you find people kind of falling into the trap of thinking, oh, it's 5 or 6 months off yet. Let's just put that to one side. And, you know, if you're going to, you know, I said before that there's a lot of principles and practices that wrap around OKRs, and one of them is making sure that they stay front and centre and that they're in current conversation and reviewed on a very regular basis. There's a real cadence, there's a real drumbeat to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so they don't get written out, stuck in a drawer, picked back up 3 or 6 months later and everyone goes, oh yeah, we were meant to be looking at that.
Exactly.
And yeah, it becomes part of the cadence of the business rather than something that sits alongside and gets
and it becomes part of the common language. You know, I was talking yesterday, actually, there's a client that we worked with 3 years ago that's reached out to us again that wants us to do some more work with them because they've doubled in size over that time, and they have their business model hasn't changed, but they are focusing on new areas now. And they said, we need to do a full sort of reset. You know, we know what our vision is, but we just need to help translating that through. And it's great to see them sort of 3 years on and see how invested they still are in OKRs. And what they said to me on the call yesterday was, they're just part of our common language now.
Right.
People talk about, you know, they, you know, ask how their OKRs are going or you know, it's how they kind of converse. It's, you know, it's the language that they use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one thing you said earlier was about being a spotlight shone on where you want to go and what you want to do. How does that change, that mindset shift, help leaders who are driving the strategy forward by spotlighting with their teams on
so
certain things?
Spotlighting is one of the most challenging things which I find leadership teams kind of grapple with around this, because it means prioritizing. And, you know, I've yet to meet a leadership team that doesn't want everything done by yesterday.
Yeah.
Everything and all. What we really work with clients to help them do is, as you say, adopt a spotlighting principle. And the opposite of spotlighting is floodlighting. So imagine you're sat in an auditorium, you're watching a show, you spotlight to a certain part of the stage, you know where the action's happening, so you watch that. If the stage is entirely floodlit, you could be looking over the right hand side as the action's happening on the left. All right, that's the basic principle. Okay, so what we encourage clients to do is we encourage clients to think of OKRs as a limited resource. right? You've only got so much bandwidth, right, for focus and attention over a given period. So where are you going to place your chips? What's your best? What's your best bet? What's going to give you the best return, yeah, right? Create the biggest value for the business over the next 3 months or 12 months or whatever period you're talking about. And more often than not, and this is the kind of guide that we give them in trying to make that decision, is that the biggest return comes from something which is transformational in nature. It's something, it's a new way of doing things, it's a new thing perhaps that you're doing, it might be actually recovering something that's gone off track significantly, but it is about, it's about transformation at the end of the day. OKRs are wasted if you're using them to manage just regular run rate business as usual operational activity, unless, I will just put a little footnote in there, unless you're transforming it or it needs significant, yeah, recovery. Okay, if it's green and it's running, then that's where it sits in the KPIs. And the KPIs, sorry to digress a second, but I think it's worth mentioning because we get asked this a lot. You know, what's the difference between an OKR and a KPI, and how do they sit alongside each other? You know, as I was saying, OKR is transformation, KPIs operational, right? There's a huge dependency on the two, though.
Yeah.
And I would actually say that your KPIs are probably more important. Because if your KPIs are all red, forget any transformation work. You absolutely need to focus on your KPIs to get them back on track.
Yeah.
Because the fires are burning, right? But once they are stabilized and you've got that bandwidth to focus on transformation and growth and so on and so forth, that's where the spotlighting can focus.
Yeah. I think I really like the analogy that you've told me in the past, which is the sat nav versus
the car dashboard.
Yeah, the car dashboard. And I think that really sort of hit home the difference to me between KPIs and OKRs. Yeah. You can't get where you need to go if you've not got enough petrol and you're not going at the right speed, but you need to know where you're heading with your sat nav.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, if you're running low on fuel, then you just reprogram your sat nav to find the nearest gas station, and then once you're sorted, then you reset your sat nav back to your original destination. So that's the interplay between the two.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked a lot about the theory behind OKRs and strategy. Can you bring it to life a bit with an example?
Yeah, so a client we worked with last year, business that has ambition to triple in size in the next 3 years. Leadership knew that they needed to do things differently. They couldn't just expect that to happen by just doing more of the same. Had kind of heard of OKRs and were curious to learn a bit more. So we spent some time with them to kind of, you know, fill them in on what they are and what they could do. And they were like, right, okay, we really want this. And they really threw themselves into it. We went through the original setup with them. So helping them to define their first set, getting the sort of framework in place, how it's going to run, how they're going to use them. You know, the corporate term is governance, but I'm not a massive fan of that phrase, but it is what it is, really. And they also invested in having some coaches, which is really important because, like I said, you know, writing your goals as OKRs doesn't change anything. It's how you then use them and how you then, as we've already said, they run on a cyclical basis. So that means that they have to be reviewed and reset. And you need some facilitation for that. And you might not want to be calling us back every single quarter to do that for you, although we're happy to do that. But, you know, so we actually train up coaches, and they trained up their coaches, and they have done a fantastic job. I'm still in touch with the CEO. And it's interesting. He said to me, because one of the early questions I asked him, I said, you personally, John, how are you going to feel like this has worked? What's going to be the evidence for you personally? He said, spending more time on the things that I enjoy around the business.
Interesting.
And And I was with him actually just only a few weeks ago. I invited him to an event with me, and I said, so how do you think it's going, you know, you personally? He says, it's great. I can focus on developing, you know, finding new clients and stuff like that. He says, which is the stuff I love. I'm not getting drawn into the internal stuff. I just see it all happening and all ticking over now. And he loves it. And I think one of the biggest shifts that happened for that organization was adopting an outcome focused mindset.
Right.
So the kind of the clue's in the title, really. Key result. Okay. So it's not an action. It's a result. It's where you want to be. It's that finishing line. You're defining that finishing line. And a lot of people shy away from that because it really kind of lays bare whether you've achieved something. They, you know, a lot of us tend to default to measuring or judging our performance by actions. We ticked everything off. Well, yeah, that's kind of part of it, but have all those actions kind of added up to a result that you wanted in the first place? And that's a shift which that client, that organization, has really kind of gotten to grips with. And he said to me that he's seen, even when they're not specifically talking about OKRs, he said he's seen people start to challenge each other about, well, what's the outcome that we're focusing for here, we're looking for here. And so he said, I can see it kind of permeating way beyond just, you know, the actual working directly on OKRs, because not everyone works directly on them, because not everybody can impact them. But he said, like in the one-to-one conversations, and you know, when the sort of the team leaders are having conversations with their teams, you know, he says, I'm just hearing outcome focus come out a lot more.
Yeah, you know? That's really interesting, and I suppose that also leads to then stretching and thinking about what outcomes you want to achieve and what success looks like as a result. And that might not be 100% achievement of an outcome if you're on the direction towards it.
Oh, you're touching on a hot topic there. Yeah, because, and where this comes from is, I don't know if it's still the case, but if you Googled OKRs about 7 or 8 years ago, actually Google came at the top of the list because they were one of the early adopters.
Yeah.
And there was this lecture by one of their guys from their innovation labs about how they deployed OKRs. And he talked extensively about the stretch.
Right.
Okay. And yeah, you know, there is absolutely scope for a stretch in a key result. Okay. Particularly if you're trying to achieve something which is really, really ambitious. Now, does that mean then that some key results are perhaps not ambitious? Not necessarily, but some of them have to be committed. Right. And this is where we kind of keep one foot. It's all well and good, you know, Silicon Valley, all that, you know, got to shoot for the stars, and if you all this, that, and the other. Absolutely, yes. However, in the rest of the world, where they, you know, they can afford to fail left, right, and centre, they wear their failures on their sleeve almost like, you know, stripes. Here in the rest of the world, there are some points, some results which absolutely have to be committed. I'll give you an example. Maybe you want to sell a new product, and in order to sell that new product, you need to get an accreditation.
Yeah.
Okay. And it might take you 3 months to earn that accreditation. Okay. So is that a genuine key result? I would argue, yes, you could have that as a key result, because it's about what's going, remember, key results, focus OKRs on what's going to create value for the business. You want to open up a new income stream by selling a new product, and you need to get this accreditation in place, then fine, you need to have that as a key, perhaps as a key result. But there's no, oh, 80% on that will do. It's absolutely, it has to be 100%.
Yeah.
It's the same with contract signatures. I've seen contracts be put in as key results in, and that may sound, you know, those two examples I've given are not particularly measurable, right? You don't have data against them. So there might be some people listening to this having, you know, choking on their coffee with what I've just said there. You can still make them measurable because you create milestones. You define what the, you know, what does 20%, 40%, 60%, 80% progress look right. like on towards that. So you make it transparent, you make it reportable, even though there's no data that you can actually track. So yeah, you can still make it measurable, even though it looks like at first like it'd be a have we got it or haven't we got it.
Yeah, so yeah. I suppose it really helps you then define what are those non-negotiables and what are those stretch aspirational pieces and allows you to really understand as a business which are which and what you really need to achieve to get that strategic focus and strategic alignment. So people are listening to this thinking, oh, not another management framework to work on. How would you talk to them about OKRs and what would you say to them?
Well, I would say, you know, much as I would love to say it's something new and something really shiny, I think you'll probably find a lot of what it covers, what it includes, what it entails, you're doing already, just maybe not in as structured and coordinated way. And it's that structure and that coordination which really brings the value. So yeah, all right, it is another acronym to think of, but in many respects we find that it replaces. It's not about adding more to what's there.
Okay.
It's usually the case that it replaces what is happening with something that is a little bit more common in terms of everybody's working the same way and everybody's speaking the same language.
Yeah.
So that in itself really starts to help to align people, help to synchronize people, help to, you know, spot those synergies and so on and so forth. So yeah, everybody's working at the same clock speed at that point, and that really helps.
So we've covered how we start small and the cadence of OKRs. How does a framework like this help people to own and stay engaged with what they're doing?
So the ownership, I mean, it has to start with leadership. Okay, I've seen OKRs fail, certainly in the early days, it's been because the leaders have said, right, just go do this, and you know, but don't bother us, don't involve us. We won't, if that's the approach that an organization or a leadership team is taking, then we won't work with them because it's just not going to work. Because the leadership team have to lead by example on this, okay? So in terms of ownership, they have to be the ones to own it first of all. They set the example, and in terms of how they work with it, I think it's really important that they set the tone around sort of leading with a bit of humility around it. You know, we're trying this, we're not going to get it perfect from day one.
Yeah.
Right, that's a really, really important point. I've seen some teams almost get themselves into a state of paralysis because they're too frightened to get going because they don't know, they haven't got a guarantee that it's going to be perfect from day one. Yeah. It's like, you've just got to jump, right? And you will learn how to fly. It's just that it might be a bit turbulent at first, but you will get there. You will get there. I was working in India last week with a team who were... got themselves almost into a bit of a debate cycle. And I just had to say, guys, time out. You've got what you need to get going. You have, right? And remember, you will review and refine every 3 months. So it's not like you're committing yourselves, you know, forever and a day to this.
Yeah.
Okay. So the leadership team really needs to move forward. And they also need to respect the fact, I mean, we touched upon it in a roundabout sort of way, but we haven't referred to it specifically, that this is a change. This represents a change to the wider audience. And, you know, different people respond to change in different ways. And we have to be aware of that and respect that some might need a little bit more hand-holding, a little bit more coercion, a little bit more support than others. So you have to take a proper change management approach to this. You know, you have to position it. You have to tell the story that's leading up to the change, why it's really important, why it's, you know, what potentially could happen if we don't do this. Yeah. Why it's imperative now. What's in it for everyone? How's it going to make things better? How's it going to make things easier for us all? And talk in terms of what resonates for the audience, not in terms of what resonates for the leadership, but what in terms of resonates for the audience.
Yeah, so what, for them
exactly.
And their roles.
Exactly, exactly. And then just make sure that there's probably more support. Go overboard on the support that's provided. And that support looks like, you know, it can be anything from briefing sessions, training sessions, coaching sessions, you know, materials that are provided, training that's provided, so on and so forth. There's a huge amount, okay, which can be provided there. And then as you start to see the changes take effect, you capture the green shoots, and the green shoots are the signs that it's starting to work, that it's starting to stick.
Yeah.
And really kind of lift those up, champion them, recognize them, maybe even to some extent reward them, because that will then drive further adoption. Okay.
Yeah.
It's proof that it's working. And you'll get to a point eventually where you'll be able to kind of call it as, you know, being part of your, this is how we do things, this is our operating system around here.
Yeah.
But you can't expect that immediately, you know. I would say if you're working on a 3-month cycle, I would say it's probably not until your third cycle.
Okay.
That you start to feel like, hey, I think we're getting hang of this. This is starting to really feel like it's habit rather than, you know, it's being forced.
Yeah. And that's really interesting because I suppose, you know, we're leaning a lot on change management theory there around celebrating the wins and building the urgency. And, you know, my experience, people who are in their day-to-day roles, they might not feel that urgency needed because it might be coming from the outside world or the ambition that the leadership team has. Mm. How do you keep that momentum when people aren't potentially involved in OKRs but are needing to understand why it's becoming a part of the fabric of the business?
Yeah, so you make a good point, because going back to the principle of spotlighting, it can mean that there are parts of the business and therefore people within the business that are not necessarily in scope for OKRs at that particular given time. Now, the spotlight might move, and it could be in the next quarter they might be. But for those that are not, it is really important to be transparent. And this is where you're doing your check-in, so you should be keeping you know, your OKR data around what's where you're up to, your progress and your confidence in terms of hitting them should be, you know, pretty current. I would say every 2 weeks there should be, you know, the latest information available. And so it's down to leadership to take the judgment as to how transparent they are with the rest of the organization on that. I would say at the very least it should be done quarterly. At the very least. But there's even some clients have even opted to send out like a monthly bulletin, you know, to the broad, a bit of a broadcast and then a dialogue every quarter, but a broadcast on this is how we're doing, this is where we're at, and this is what it means.
Yeah,
yeah.
Keep everyone up to date what's going on. Because I suppose we, you know, we are talking change and we're talking longer term because we're talking strategy.
Yeah.
Those things can take a while to be seen within the business.
They can.
Without that cadence of communication and sharing those small wins along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And if this is done well, I mean, I'm going to kind of tie it back to sort of a bit of psychology here. You know, what's really important, especially in this day and age with so much uncertainty around, is that people feel secure in their role, in their job, in their employment. Now, I know that's not always possible, and there are some times and some instances where certainty can be a bit low. But if you as a leadership team are able to demonstrate and be transparent about the steps that you're taking to build and to build the future that the organization wants, and that there is a place in that for everyone and so on and so forth, then that can actually help. You can leverage benefit from OKRs there for people who aren't even working on them.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So because you're becoming a lot more structured and transparent in how you're working towards those really big, really important goals for the business, you can kind of leverage that and for so that it has a benefit and influence beyond those that are just working directly on them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose that leads me on to my next question, which is, how does culture affect the success of an OKR program? Because it feels like it's pretty intrinsic.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Again, like I said, OKRs are much more than just writing your goals in a different way. It's interesting because when we work with clients on OKRs, it often reveals that sometimes culture needs tweaking here and there. The principles and practices. Okay, so it's no coincidence that when we work with clients to help them adopt OKRs, they often share our clients very similar values. Okay, sometimes they're explicit in the organization, sometimes they're just there. Okay,
right.
But it's that most of them value collaboration, most of them value innovation and empowerment and transparency and accountability and those types of values. Now they might value them, but they might not necessarily be absolutely really strong and healthy. Okay, so for instance, transparency. For transparency to work, you have to have a healthy amount of psychological safety in the organization. Because if you want people to be open and honest, particularly when, for instance, if you're having a check-in, a fortnightly check-in, and your key result is maybe not looking quite as hopeful as it was a couple of weeks ago, you've got to feel safe enough to be able to be transparent and say, I think there's a risk we might miss this. Without fear of any comeback on you. And that's what psychological safety is about.
Yeah.
And if psychological safety isn't healthy enough, then what you'll end up with is people in that situation going, yeah, it's fine. And then at the 11th hour, you find that it's not, and it's too late to do anything about it.
Yeah.
So psychological safety isn't about making things soft and fluffy. It's actually about having a space in which it's safe enough to have the hard and difficult conversations. That's what it is. So from a cultural point of view, psychological safety is super important. And then, like I said, the other ones, like around collaboration and innovation, and another part, so I'm going to tie this one back to psychological safety as well, is around particularly if you're using OKRs to kind of test out new ideas.
Yeah.
We have a theory that if we do X, we're going to get Y. And you know what? We're going to try that for the next 3 months. And if it doesn't work, then okay, at least we've learned and we can maybe try something a little bit different in the next quarter. In some organizations, that could be really, really difficult to do for people, because they might, any mention of failure, good God, I'll get sacked.
Yeah.
This is not about just, failure per se. This is about accepting what I would call intelligent failure, which is where you, in fact, I prefer to use the term experimentation, because that's a little less
test and learn.
It's a little less emotionally loaded than the term. So let's experiment with this. Let's test it out.
Yeah.
And see, and if we fall short, if we fall short, then at least we've learned. Okay. And that's the that's in an organization that has a low level of psychological safety, you're never going to get that. you're going to get people who set key results and commit to key results that are entirely achievable, that are entirely doable. They're going to sandbag them because they just don't feel confident enough to stretch or innovate.
Yeah, and then they stay in a safe environment, which will lead to strategic ambition not being achieved because everyone's staying safe and not moving forward.
Yeah.
So we're talking there about failure and the inevitability that trying something new, there's going to be failure at some point. And all of this, not everyone's going to get it right first time. What are the common pitfalls that you see people fall into with this?
Okay, so I'm going to talk in terms of leadership teams again here. I've yet to meet a leadership team that doesn't have huge ambition, okay? That's why they're a leadership team. And so the way that that shows up when you're starting OKRs is they want to apply OKRs to everything. So you have to kind of get them to throttle back a little bit from that. And this is where the spotlighting principle comes into play and why it's so important. So one of the common pitfalls is that they set themselves too many.
Right.
Okay, that they set themselves too many. In fact, we've actually been calling to organisations in the past that have, you know, read the book and gone, oh, how hard can it be? They've tried it for themselves and they've ended up just absolutely drowning under the weight of their OKRs.
And what does too many look like?
Well, I was talking, it's interesting actually, because I mentioned before that I was talking to a former client yesterday who wants us to come back in kind of 3 years later. And that one of the things they were saying to me was, I think we see real value at the 3 month level. That's where we've got it. But I think I'm not too sure that we've got them focused just right, because we've got a lot focused around our operational plan. And so we're probably sort of 80% operational, 20%, you know, on the transformational. And I said, right, okay, so just out of interest, how many have you got? They said, oh, we've got about 43. I think you've probably got a few too many, and that's for an organisation that's got 300 people in it.
Okay. And what does a good number look like?
What's a good number? In terms of quarterly OKRs, if you're really focusing them purely on transformational activity, I would say 3 or 4.
Okay.
Yeah, 3 or 4. I know it's a big difference to 43. Yeah. You know, we've got a corporate client that has 12-month OKRs, and they have had 9 this year and they're going down to 6 for 2026.
Right.
Now, all right, I said they use their 12 months as most organizations would use 3 months. That's because of the size that they are. And right. Yeah, they're not, their drumbeat is a lot slower than perhaps, you know, a 300 person organization. But the point is that they have decided, they've learned, and they have actually decided to contract down, because even 9 for an organization that has 20,000 people, even 9 was too many.
Right.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so that's a common pitfall. Any others that we need to look out for?
Yeah, I would say being too, not sort of getting the outcome focus right from the outset. So you end up still with lots of tick lists, actions, so on and so forth, which just doesn't deliver the value, you know. I think that's one of the very, very easy pitfalls to make, that there isn't that sort of outcome discipline around it. The other thing is, and this is kind of sort of touches upon change management, but from the point of view of setting yourself up for success, depending on the size and shape of the organization, it's often worth doing a pilot to start off with. You know, the organization which I mentioned that has gone from 9 down to 6, we did a pilot on one of their programs, which allowed us to test out the design that we created for them around, you know, their review and reporting and resetting and so on and so forth. And that was what we see with pilots, is that it actually creates a bit of a buzz. So from a change point of view, you can kind of leverage that energy where you can kind of, oh, we've proved the concept, and this, you know, you use it to communicate the successes, to demonstrate that it's working. And all of a sudden you see the energy from the rest of the organization being changed from, oh God, not another, you know, new approach, to when are we getting this?
Yeah.
You know,
when can we be involved?
Yeah, we feel left out. So it's a bit of, you know, you kind of tap it into a bit of FOMO there.
Yeah.
I remember another client that we worked with who, it was a whole function. It was their business, it was their commercial sales function that decided to pilot them. And kind of what happened at leadership level was that the head of the commercial division, within 6 months, was running rings around his peers on you know, in the leadership team, because he was so on the ball with what was going on with the key priorities in his area. And because he knew not just on the progress, but also knew the confidence ratings around them, and so he was able to sort of really talk about forward planning with confidence, you know, with a degree of certainty. And that then really kind of showed the rest of the team up. And that was interesting, actually, because initially that client wanted to do a full implementation, but we worked with the leadership team, and a number of them were going, oh, I've got my spreadsheets, I don't need that. 6 months, complete turnaround.
Really? Complete and so turnaround. Did the rest of the leadership then want in on
they did,
the program? And
but I know at least one of them that decided to leave.
Okay.
And this is interesting, because some people do not want to get on board with the level of accountability and transparency that comes with this.
Interesting.
I'm not going to say that it happens every time that an organization adopts OKRs, but I have known it happen that some senior leaders just go, this isn't for me, I'm out.
Yeah, interesting. And I suppose as well, there might be a sort of cultural shift for people around accountability as well, because you're forming groups of people to get involved in the strategic focus that maybe in the past has been owned and run by a leader and that control sits with them. You're moving into more of a sort of squad environment where people are a bit more involved and accountable at all different levels within the business.
Absolutely. And that's one of the beauties, I think, of OKRs, is that it just, I think there's two perspectives to look at this, really. You know, leadership can empower others, right? And the benefit to leadership is it actually gives them some bandwidth for them to go off and perhaps do more work at a strategic level.
But
it also as well means that they don't have to have all the answers. You know, the answers often lie within the organization, because those are the people who are closest to the challenges or the opportunities, and probably have a much better idea about how to either seize them or overcome them. Yeah. So therefore, you know, why not bring those people in? And so that's the other perspective on empowerment, is that you're kind of unlocking that insight and potentially energy that's there in the organization to bring this all forward and make it happen within the framework of OKRs.
Yeah.
And you know, there is that accountability. You mentioned teams. It's not about the whole team having accountability, because, all right, we're getting into the nuts and bolts of it here, but I think it's worth mentioning. You know, if you've got an OKR that's being worked on by a team, there's still individual accountability in that, because you'll have one person in that team who is an objective leader, and then you'll have the rest of the team members who are owners of the key results. So there is still individual accountability, even though they are a tight-knit team or squad, like you said, which are focusing on that, on moving that forward. And they often comprise of people from different functions.
Interesting. So different perspectives.
Yeah.
People who don't normally work together.
100%. Because a priority for the next 3 months, for instance, might not necessarily neatly fit into one single function. In fact, I would say 90% of the time they don't. And they need collaboration. A classic example is a product. You know, your product requires development, it requires research, it requires testing, it requires marketing, it requires sales, it will need some input from finance and so on and so forth. These are multidisciplinary teams that at various points through the life cycle, different areas need to make contributions. So you need different people on the team.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, yeah, you know, this is why when we see clients, you know, I mentioned that we've gone in to kind of undo OKRs when clients have tried to do them for themselves. They've often gone straight to, you know, this is the organizational priority. Therefore, what can each function do?
Okay.
And you have the head of each function who wants to, you know, take ownership and be seen to be taking ownership, step up and say, well, I think my area can do this, this and this, because that's what instinctively feels like the right thing to do. I don't blame them for it. I don't blame them for it. But the consequence is a load of siloed activity.
Yeah.
Which then creates waste. It creates disconnection. And you don't actually know whether you're going to achieve what you need to achieve until the end of the 3 months, and everything rolls up from the silos, and you think, has it connected? You know, you don't know if it's connected until right at the end, and that's a bit late.
Yeah,
that's a bit late.
A lot of wasted time and effort and energy along the way.
Yeah.
So, big portion of our audience are either MDs or CFOs in organisations. How can OKRs help them with either financial outcomes that they're looking to achieve or business outcomes that they're looking to drive?
So I'm going to come back to the principle of key results here. And, you know, key results can be can focus on financial and non-financial as well. So they're not wedded to one or the other. But yes, they can provide that spotlight for that measure which is going to make the biggest difference. And, you know, I mentioned KPIs earlier. It's possible that you might actually have, say, for instance, some financial measures. I don't know about, you know, cost per acquisition of customer, perhaps, is something in marketing that you might want to focus on. You would undoubtedly have that as a KPI on your marketing dashboard, maybe even your finance dashboard. But it doesn't mean to say you can't then use that as a key result if it's something you want to focus on. Okay, so the benefit to your FD, the benefit to the MD is, instead of just having a single dashboard of all your KPIs and going, right, well, we need to focus on this, this, and this, you can actually then pull out, you know, a few of those, use those as key results.
Yeah.
In which case you will have a team of people focused on whatever is going to happen to improve that cost of acquisition. And so you're actually, you know, the focus that brings to drive an outcome and an impact on that key result, on that particular measure, is the benefit that the OKRs brings.
Okay. Yeah, so you're not reinventing the wheel every time if there's key measures that are really important to that strategic focus.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right, let's get a little bit more practical. What's a small experiment or pilot potentially that a business leader could do to sort of dip their toes into this OKR world?
Yeah, so pilot, you've got a couple of choices. You can either pilot in a function, so kind of vertically, if you will, or you can pilot horizontally. We've done some pilots just purely at leadership level. There are pros and cons to either. With sort of a pilot in a function, you can find yourself, I mean, you don't get the cross-functional benefit, obviously, by doing that at that stage.
Yeah.
So you're kind of just keeping yourself, by virtue of that, you're kind of limiting the scope as to the, I suppose, the level of ambition that you can have, because you can't really pull in other areas at that stage. So it's like the ambition's purely within that function, okay?
Yeah.
Which is still entirely, you know, a decent way to sort of prove the concept, decent way to sort of prove that the habits and the routines work and the reporting work and there's value in it. Okay.
Yeah.
When you pilot sort of horizontally across a leadership team, again, you know, that helps the whole of a team get to grips with and get their head around, you know, what it means for them, what it means for, you know, perhaps their existing routines and how it can fit in with that Because like I said, we don't want to be adding. We either want to be integrating or maybe in some instances even replacing. It's about, one client once said to me, it's about making sure that OKRs happen within the flow, all right, not above the flow, right. Which I thought was a nice way of putting it. The disadvantage of doing a horizontal pilot is, and this, but I say disadvantage, but you can actually leverage this, as I mentioned earlier, is that you end up with the leadership team talking in a language which might not necessarily be fully understood by the rest of the business.
Interesting.
So there is a disadvantage in that, but if you can leverage that in such a way so as to actually kind of build an energy, you know, around, well, okay, when are we going to get it? You'll find that individual members of the leadership team will be kind of almost itching to want to start defining OKRs with their
involved.
People. Yeah. We want to start talking the same language with everyone. I've never in the, how long is it now? 8 or 9 years I've been working with OKRs. I've never worked on a pilot with a client that they've then turned around and said, we're not going to do this.
Right.
Never. It's always, right, we just, and I think it's maybe down to the fact that the clients perhaps just want to build their own confidence with it, first of all.
Yeah.
And maybe it's, maybe sometimes it's the leadership team that are not fully bought into it and want to see it for themselves. Fine, no problem. But we've never, ever done a pilot and it's never, and they've never followed through and taken it further into the organization. So I would say, yeah, the pilot is super important. And the other thing I'd say that is really important is, and this is definitely when you get to the larger, in bringing in the rest of the organization to it, is you have to define how you're going to use them. Because if you just write them, and even if you get a piece of software to put them into, that's not enough. People need to know what the routines are around them, how they fit in with the whole drumbeat of the organization, where the reporting is going to be reviewed, and how it's going to drive things, how it all connects. You've got to paint the picture, and that comes back to that term governance. We call it designing the framework.
I suppose it's that, again, coming back to that difference between writing something, sticking it in a drawer, coming back to it 12 months later, and it actually becoming a living, breathing part of the business and what the business is focused on. And again, that spotlight piece that we've talked about.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
So I'm curious, where do you see OKRs going over the next few years?
Okay. So, we've got to mention AI here. It's interesting how it's starting to kind of feature in the OKR work that we're doing and that some clients are doing for themselves and so on and so forth. It's even showing up in some of the OKR software now. It's possible, if you so wished, for you to upload your strategy into GPT, for instance, and for it to suggest OKRs to you. I would really caution against that, because one of the really, really big benefits of OKRs is the socialization of the strategy, of the priorities, and therefore how people can contribute and connect and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And if GPT's firing out some OKRs at you, then all you're just going to be doing is just then handing them out to people. And they're not going to have any ownership. They're not going to feel like they want to do it because they've had a hand in creating it and influencing it and so on and so forth. Where I think AI can help is in helping to refine what you've created for yourselves.
Yeah.
So if you come up with an objective and some key results, then yeah, by all means, run it through GPT to see if they can, you know, perhaps, you know, make the objective more compelling, more engaging.
Yeah.
You know, because an objective is always written, is never written for the people who write it. It's never written for their benefit. It's written for the benefit of those that are going to read it.
Okay.
So the wider organization. So that's why when we get our clients to write an objective, we challenge them to say not just what they're going to do, but why they're going to do it. And, you know, we're not all the greatest wordsmiths in the world. Some of us are a little bit more creative than others. And those of us that are not can rely on tools like GPT to help us out in that respect. And I think absolutely that's and if you're trying to, if you've got an objective and you're trying to think what could be good measures for it, that's absolutely a question that you could put to GPT for ideas. But to hand everything over to AI and say produce my OKRs for it, I think is you miss out on a huge amount of benefit. Effectively, you're just relying on the fact that your goals are going to be written of OKRs and just assume that that's going to change everything. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not at all.
It comes back to that human connection, doesn't it? And actually the practice of sitting down, questioning, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? And how am I going to measure it? Is part of the process of understanding that direction of travel, how you're going to get there, what you're going to intentionally do to spotlight these things. And like you say, ChatGPT spitting out a perfectly formed, perfectly worded OKR isn't necessarily going to get the minds of the people that are working on them to really know where they're heading and what
That's
they're
right.
doing.
That's right. So for as long as organizations have people within them whom they require to use their brain power to solve challenges and to help seize opportunities, then and come up with new ways of doing things and new innovations, as long as that's required, they still, you know, there's still a place for OKRs. In the way that, you know, we've been talking. If we get to a point where, you know, everybody's acting like they're a robot and they don't have to think for themselves, then, you know, it doesn't sound like a great future. But yeah, I suppose, you know, that's when OKRs become redundant. But for as long as we are required to solve the problems and innovate, we need something like OKRs in place.
Okay, final question. Mm-hmm. What's one small step that someone could take this week to get to the sort of progress you've been talking about?
Oh, I would say, even before you start thinking, right, OKRs, you know, should we do a pilot? Should we go big bang? Yada, yada, yada. Outcome. It's the outcome focus. You know, if someone listening or watching wants to kind of play with some of what we've talked about, the next time you sat down having a conversation with someone about expectations and what you want, what you're looking for, just make sure that you're not talking in terms of actions.
Right.
Challenge yourself and them to think about, right, okay, if we do this action, how are we going to know that it was worth doing in the first place? Right, what's the evidence that we'll see that it's worked? Okay, and that's just a small step towards sort of starting to build that outcome focused mindset. And I think that's probably the easiest first step that you can take.
Yeah.
Okay, even before you start thinking about how to write things in OKRs.
Interesting, and that's such an easy thing to challenge on a conversational basis or in that PowerPoint of your strategy. Is it outcome focused? Is it measurable?
That's right.
As
that's
a starting
right.
point.
And you can be forgiven for thinking that those at leadership level might be a little bit more inclined to just have a natural outcome focus. Nope. Not in my experience. It doesn't matter what level you're working at in an organisation. I've found that outcome focus is hugely variable.
Right.
Yeah, hugely.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much for the conversation, Roger. How can people get in touch if they want to find out more?
Well, they can always find us at therebegiants.com. That's all one word. Obviously, I'm on LinkedIn under Roger Longdon. And yeah, you know, we're always well up for a conversation around OKRs and how we can help clients become more outcome focused and build more connection to their strategy. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
No, you're welcome. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.